Last fall, I was invited to be the closing speaker for the Liberal Religious Education Conference in San Diego. The four-day event was focused on four potentially, one might say often, difficult conversations. We can imagine the topics. The first was race, then sex, then death, and lastly, money. Not necessarily in that order, but all in 4 days. One comment came out of the conversation about money that really stuck with me. Since we are here at Theodore Parker Church at the beginning of our pledge drive and talking at least to some extent today about money and about the perspective of abundance and what we are abundant with, I thought I would share the comment. It was in the context of our being asked to consider the relationship between our life's priorities, those things that are of most value and worth to each of us, and those things we spend our money on. We were asked to think about how we each framed the question of this relationship for ourselves, to which one conferee suggested, it's what you're asking is, where do I want to bench when I die, and why wait? Think about it. I thought in some respects it was rather brilliant. It wraps into one tidy response all the anxieties we have about what we've accumulated over the course of our lives or not, and what's important to us, what we have contributed to somehow in time or talent or treasure, and how it has given us a stake in the game, if you will, how it might have some lasting impact. Where do I want to bench when I die? And then, why wait? 305 years ago, which is kind of a hard number to wrap your head around, actually, 305 years ago, some of the folks I talked about earlier, the people who raised chickens and grew vegetables and baked bread for livings, and who lived right here where we're sitting, right here within a few miles of this very church, put their coins together and built a church so that they could sing together and be grateful and praise the spirit that animated their lives and take care of each other and their tender hearts and their children and work to make the world a better place. We are heirs to those imaginations, those benches, if you will. Every person since then as well who polished the wood or painted the walls or set the clock or rang the bell. Every person who committed their time and their love, and not least their money, to this idea. That is all a part of our legacy. It's kind of stunning, 305 years worth. We have an abundance of that legacy right here in these pews. We are so blessed with this history of commitment. Talk about abundance. And what else? What else are we abundant of? It may not surprise you, I have made a list to help you. In no particular order, first we have work to do, caring work to do, learning work to do, justice work to do. Now more than ever, we have all of those in abundance. We need to continue to be a compassionate, progressive, and prophetic voice for sharing a tradition, our Unitarian Universalist tradition of radical hospitality, and for building a world that says all beings, human, animal, plant, all beings have value and dignity and deserve care and respect. We have an abundance of that work to do. We have an abundance of people to welcome, not only those who are visiting our home or those who are staying, but those who have never been through our doors. Think of that abundance. and of the welcome we have to offer to people who need it. We have space to care for what is ours. It lives and breathes with us. It shelters and provides respite for us. It is ours to care for and maintain so that those who come after us will have it as well. We have an abundance of place. We have an abundance of decisions to make all the time together as we grow and become and change. Change is life, and doing it well requires us to acknowledge the abundance of decision-making around us all the time. We have grace to celebrate, so much grace in our midst, among, within, and between us all, the grace of life, of breath, of care and joy, of sorrows made manageable. We have abundant grace here. We have creativity. In our music and our art, we are filled in every pew with a plethora of creative imagination. And not least on my list, we have love to share. So much love to share. So much capacity and opportunity. It overwhelms. No doubt my list is incomplete. You will be reminded of abundances that I have not remembered or acknowledged. How do we even begin to prioritize them and move forward? And how, after all, does the money part fit in? Well, the bench, you'll remember, costs money. The proverbial benches we will all be leaving, and why wait? I will tell you that the money part fits in a most significant way, that we are not able to be or do or act on all of our abundance, in whatever order, without the finances to make it happen. Since we stopped trading chickens for bread, or bread for vegetables, or vegetables for chicken, we have created lives increasingly dependent on that thing we call money. And our congregation is no less connected to that reality. Did you recognize the story we heard earlier about the cricket and the coins? I hope so. I used it either last year or the year before, likely related to a message about our tendency to hear money over more life-oriented things. And I likely cast money in a somewhat negative light over and against the cricket, and our capacity to even hear the cricket more than we do the change falling. But today I want us to think about this story a little bit differently. Money, we know, is a reality in our lives, a complicated and experience-laden reality. We all have histories with it, for better or worse. It generates all kinds of emotions, from joy to envy, from frustration to gratitude. But today I'm hoping that there is a way we can orient our perspectives about money so that when we hear that story about all those people turning to find the coins, it is because they know they want to do something good with them. It's because they want to leave a bench somewhere and maybe start now. I mean, really, what can you build with a cricket? But money. Money helps us fund the priorities we shape from our abundance. Years ago, I did a teacher training at a Unitarian Universalist congregation I was serving. I wanted people to consider what this tradition and the church I was then involved with really meant in their lives. I asked them to share four parts of their identity. And I may have described this before, so you may know the game. You describe first your nationality. And then second, your gender. Third, your sexual orientation. And finally, identify for yourself and the group your chosen faith. The identities are all, we know, fluid constructs, but imagine for yourselves how you might respond. And then I told them at this gathering that they had to give up one of their identities. So which would go first? Their nationality, their gender, sexual orientation, or their faith? And then they had to give up another, and then another, until they were left with only one, which begs the question of what our most significant internal identities are. Of the 20 or so people present, you can imagine that not very many of them had Unitarian Universalist as the final identity. But one family did. They were very clear. It was a couple with two children who had come to the congregation as husband and wife, until the husband acknowledged the need to transition and live his life as a woman. And in their faith home, they found love and support and ongoing welcome during their time of transition. And they shared with us in that room of 20 or so teachers, where we talked about our most intimate senses of self and identity. They talked about how they could not have survived the changes that their family experienced and continued to experience without the tradition and the community that said, "This is your home. You are welcome and loved here. You are valued and wanted here, just as you are, and just as you are becoming." I will confess to you that I am a little worried about the future of our liberal faith communities. We've had a bump this year, thanks in part, in all likelihood, to the current political environment. I'm so glad that people who may feel at a loss in their lives are looking for communities that share their perspectives and help them find a way through by being together. But I also know that religion suffers pretty strong judgment these days, either strong judgment or too little consideration at all. Many find community in places other than congregational life. I wish they had been dancing with us last night. Is it overwhelming for me to say that we need to save the idea of faith community? We need to regenerate engagement in congregational life that reminds all of us and teaches our children the value of questioning and of seeking, of looking for goodness and meaning. That reminds all of us that we care about and for each other, every other who chooses love to lead the way. We have abundance here, and we have abundance to offer. Let's pick up all those coins we heard drop and put them to work on behalf of our justice-seeking, our welcome, our creativity, our space, our grace, our decision-making, and our love. Whatever order speaks to you in priority, let's honor the farmer and the chicken guy and the bread maker by putting our coins together to make this 305-year-old church continue to thrive. We have so much to offer, and a world that so needs it. Let's not wait to find our benches right here, where they can make a difference. Let's put them here now. Why wait?